You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
On Tuesday night, City Impact Church hosted what they dubbed a Christian Summit on the State of the Nation. 95 BFM obtained a recording of the event, where speakers discussed plans for a far-right electoral movement heading into October's election. I spoke to Byron C. Clark and Hannah Blake, activists focused on the Aotearoa conservative and Christian extremist movements, about the event and where extremism here might be headed. The event was held at City Impact's expansive North Shore campus, the headquarters for the megachurch's national and international operations. Multiple religious and political figures gave speeches on the night, discussing what they perceived as the issues facing New Zealand society and the plans of extremist and far-right political movements here. The event functioned as both a way to get the audience more involved in politics and as a meeting place for a number of the far-right parties seeking to gain office this year and sympathetic religious figures. In 2020, the five parties that fell into this camp won a total of 3% of the party vote. While far-right beliefs have grown since then, they believe the same scattered results could happen if a cohesive electoral campaign isn't fielded. I asked Byron about this focus on unity.
Well, there's a number of different parties in that space with, you know, very similar ideology and a similar worldview, and they're currently sharing about 2 or 3% of the vote between them. So I think they realise that if they have any chance of getting into Parliament, there needs to be, you know, some sort of unity between those Christian parties and potentially also with some of the other small parties that may not be Christian as such, but have similar views around COVID and the COVID response and so forth. So, you know, we see this with Brian Tamaki forming the Freedoms New Zealand umbrella party now with Sue Gray's party as part of it. And there's attempts to, you know, form some other coalition with some of those other parties. But I think what's preventing it is, you know, a lot of big egos in that space. People want to be the leader, or they want to be the largest party in the coalition, as I think Leighton Baker talked about a bit in his talk. They have various meetings about having some kind of coalition, but then it never seems to come out with one.
The first speaker of the night was Bob McCroskey, founder of Family First New Zealand, who spent the first half of his speech outlining these cultural issues, along with national enacts perceived in action on them.
So we have this radical abortion law, and we have a leader of a major party who says that abortion is tantamount to murder, and yet at the same breath says they're not going to touch a law that murders unborn children. Next slide. We have a euthanasia law that puts vulnerable people at risk that was brought into power led by a politician who's supposed to be a centre-right conservative. Next slide. We won this debate, but they'll be back because they love their drugs and they want to legalise them. Next slide, conversion therapy. They want to criminalise parents who want to affirm their boys as being boys and their daughters as being girls. They want to stop people who want to get counselling for unwanted sexuality and gender issues. They want to criminalise the counsellor and they want to stop people being set free. They want to tell you to tell biological lies by identifying boys as she and her. They want you to sneak off young girls for abortions without telling the parents. They want you to sneak kids off to have puberty blockers.
Many speakers touched on similar topics, with many on the far right sharing common grievances and conspiracy theories. I asked Byron about the most prominent of these in Aotearoa.
So we've really seen, particularly since the COVID-related restrictions have died down a lot, and we don't have vaccine passes required everywhere and things, a pivot from sort of COVID-related conspiracy theories to culture wars around, you know, transgender issues. And this has always been there in that space. And I attended a public meeting held by the New Conservatives in 2019, where the then deputy leader, Elliot Ekele, held up a book from the library about transgender teenagers and yelled about how, you know, they're coming for your children and so on. So this has been there, you know, for a long time, but it's become much more prominent recently, I think, especially because of things that are happening in the United States and to a lesser extent in the UK that are, you know, influencing that movement here. So we saw like the Kelly J. Kingman Child Tour, which really invigorated a lot of this you know, opposition to transgender and gender diverse people in that space. And I think that these groups, like particularly the New Conservatives, have perhaps realised that this is a issue that appeals wider than this evangelical Christian demographic, and they can bring in other people into the fold through pushing this issue. So, you know, I'm concerned that over the next 4 months between now and the election, you know, we could potentially see, you know, a lot more transphobia and that sort of rhetoric coming out of these spaces, and you know, being used to try and drum up support for these kinds of parties.
McCroskey then moved on to ways of achieving political change, highlighting incrementalism, like the Republican erosion of abortion rights in the US, as a process to model.
And the pro-life movement did not pack up their tent, sob, feel sorry for themselves, and say, oh, we'll just put little picket fences around our churches and not say anything more. No, they didn't. They kept fighting. They did it incrementally. They did parental notification laws. They did restriction on ages. They did freedom of conscience for providers. And they got to the point where last year Roe v. Wade was overturned. We have to think in terms of those increments. And I gave the example to the pastors this afternoon that, say, for example, the whole gender thing, and kids being told that you can choose your sex. We need to be realistic. We need to start and win winnable things. And we need to start at primary school and start there, win that, then move on to secondary school. You see what I'm saying?
Speakers more generally touched on a need for churches and religious communities to be more active in politics. This ranged from direct support of candidates sympathetic to their cause, to more grassroots actions, like joining local groups and fighting the culture war on a community level.
They like to get involved on the ground. They like to do charitable works, but also be able to push their ideas through those charitable organisations. So, for instance, a lot of evangelical, I would say just in general, evangelical churches are against sex work. And so the way that they handle that is they try and do a lot of outreach towards sex workers, but with the end goal of ending sex work as opposed to actually supporting the sex workers. And then you've got people like Bob McCoskrie from Family First, who set out to take current quote-unquote culture war issues and give Christians the tools to and the language to talk to not only their community but their local politician and to parliament so that they can influence en masse, as it were. So they provide very handy breakdowns, quote pieces of legislation, what to say, who to contact. And, you know, Family First has done this for years, for like 20, coming up 20 years now. And that is very much the kind of how they sort of get into the political sphere, by sort of doing this organised engagement with community leaders and with politicians surrounding issues that they consider important to them.
But for all the talk of unity, there have been some serious conflicts between some strands of the far right, including between some of the speakers. During the Q&A panel between the candidates, Helen Horton from New Conservatives and the Tamaki's repeatedly traded verbal blows.
And I work with a lot of young people, and we need to be able to support them. Pardon? You're right there.
Gosh. Let's go, guys. Come on, we've got a short period of time.
Sorry.
I asked Byron about the fractures in these circles and how likely a more coordinated movement is.
I think the fractures that have occurred mostly seem to be, you know, about ego rather than any political difference. I think, you know, we saw this in the 2020 election. Eli Te Kahika, who now seems to have largely disappeared from that political space, was, you know, trying to form an alliance with Vision New Zealand, the Destiny Church affiliated party, and that fell apart because Hannah Tamaki didn't want to be co-leader but wanted to be leader, and they wanted to use the Vision branding rather than Billy Te Kahika's branding, and they couldn't agree on that, and so it seems that whenever they try and get together, there'll be, you know, multiple people who want to be the leader, or other people will think their branding is, you know, more important, and they'll cite, you know, polls and say, oh, we got, you know, 1.5% while you're on, you know, 0.5%, therefore it needs to be us, or whatever. So I think it's the egos that are preventing unity rather than significant political differences, although there are, you know, there are some political differences there, but they're relatively small ones, I think.
I also asked Byron what obstacles he thought faced the far right going into the October election, and where the movement could go depending on their success.
I think there is a number of obstacles really preventing them from gaining ground. One is that they're so divided. You know, in 2020 there were, I think, five parties in this space, all competing for the same demographic. This election, it looks like, again, there are going to be five parties, but it's largely the same people. But just I think as well, some of the issues that they were pushing have really become a bit taboo in politics. So I think that's perhaps one of the reasons that the real target at the moment seems to be the LGBT plus community. I think another barrier is just that... you know, we're a very secular country, and on the whole, a very progressive country. The country leans very, very progressive, and the actual audience for these ideas is still pretty small. So we shouldn't be too concerned that one of these groups will get into Parliament. But at the same time, you know, I think we need to remember that they can have a lot of influence, you know, without getting into Parliament, particularly if they are polling high enough to be part of debates and things, and can then have the effect of widening that that Overton window, bringing issues into the wider political discussion that previously, you know, were, you know, outside the bounds of, sort of acceptable debate. And I think they're, you know, having some success with that, with the transgender issue.
I also asked Hannah where she thought the movement could go to from here if they don't gain power in October.
It will depend very much on who it is that carries on the movement, because I think there is very varying levels of political sophistication within the different parties that are trying to get into Parliament at the moment. My main concern is that they will try and get a relatively political sophisticated party together and try and get seats by getting one MP elected in an area that's generally conservative. Nothing that they are saying is new to me. This is what I grew up with. I don't think people in New Zealand generally, they don't seem to have deep conversations with one another, because, you know, it often gets intense. People have different points of view. So I don't think that people realise the extremity of general evangelical beliefs and how widespread they are within New Zealand. Because, as I mentioned at the start, evangelical culture is a consumer culture that is apart from a denomination. It's an ideology, a worldview, more than it is a specific church. And so it's pretty much impossible to get accurate statistics on. So I don't think that people understand how much of New Zealand Christianity is influenced by evangelical culture, and how much these ideas have actually been part of New Zealand Christianity, but it's taken something like the pandemic to trigger them into action. But they've always been there.
That was a report on the City Impact meeting recently about political engagement for the far right.
That was a 95BFM podcast. Support 95BFM with a B-card. Go to 95BFM.com/signup.